you have to.
Copyright laws.
Oh, okay.
Before you can proceed.
There you go, that was it. I had the opportunity last year while I was out sending emails all over the world trying to get, well, one, informing a lot of our colleagues that Bert Tanner had passed away, many of which didn't know he was even sick. And then also, shortly after that, soliciting their support in what turned out to be a successful enterprise at getting the honorary PhD. And looking at all the responses I got from the emails, as well as the letters, I had a much deeper appreciation for what some people have been talking about here, the depth and the multidimensionality of how Bert had interacted with colleagues. And I do recall the first time I ever saw him, I was a graduate student, and I knew who Champ Tanner was, and I knew that he was someone to be feared. But I never met him. And I was in a meeting in Davis, and there was this guy, long hair, mustache, had on an orange shirt, and on the shirt was a giant plant, which I recognized to be a marijuana plant, imprinted on the shirt. And someone said, "You know who that is?" And I go, "No." And they go, "That's Champ Tanner's son." And I go, "No way." And it was. First time I ever met him. Never said anything to him, but that was my first impression. I have been fortunate over the years to live in Logan and work at USU and receive a lot of help professionally and personally by the vicinity of Campbell Scientific, and especially Bert. Because when I came there, I knew something about making measurements, probably enough to be dangerous. In fact, I remember Al Weiss, when I was a master's student, taught me how to make thermocouples and how to use them. But when I got to Logan, I learned a lot more over time, largely through him. And some of the things that I carry with me now are that we don't measure anything. We measure a value that we think is hopefully close and close enough to the real value, which is mythical, since we can't measure it. And so you get a little depressed about that, and so what? That's the way it is, okay? It's hard to make good measurements. And there's one of the problems that I see now is that to do measurements carefully, the way Bert would have us do it, you have to be methodical, you have to be careful, you have to be thoughtful. It's time-consuming, okay? But at the same time, the system now is telling young scientists, I want you to get as many cars out the door as possible, and I don't really care if they run well, as long as they get out the door and the customer's stupid enough to buy them, all right? And so there's a conflict now brewing in academia, at least, between what scientists are told to do to keep their jobs and doing this, okay? It's really hard to observe nature properly, and close doesn't count. There are a few people, some are in this audience, John Norman, George Thurl, and a few others, who managed to have their feet in their hands and their minds in all of these parts of the way that we do science, or at least the way we like to pretend we do science, okay? And it doesn't always go in the direction I've indicated here. Understanding transducers, which are the basis of our measurement, their connection to measurement systems, which produce data, which most of us just believe to be true. And then that data combines both directions sometimes with theory, which causes this cycle of define a problem, test things, redefine the problem, test things, etc. There are people that are really good at this. There are people that are really good at this. There are people who kind of mix this, some of this, some of this. Very few people see the whole system. And Bert either Bert saw most of this system, even though he would always say, well, you know, I don't know shit about this topic. And then, you know, he was always that dangerous, you know, I don't know anything. But he also influenced people in all of those. And that's really astounding. There's not many people. And I can tell you that most of the next generation of scientists that I know cannot do this. They are being trained very much to be partitioned, either here or here or here. Okay? So we have a bunch of people working in these little individual areas, and we all know how we're tearing apart the watch, and unfortunately there aren't very many people left who know how to put the watch together again. And this is a big thing, in my opinion, a big thing that he did, and helped me understand a little better about how you can connect some of these things, and that doing this 90% right isn't good enough. Once in a while, he did. He wasn't quite as humble as other times. I remember a quote when he was exceedingly upset about some, I don't even remember who or what group it was, and I always remember that comment. We've forgotten more about making measurements. This is sort of what we do when I reported a paper yesterday, and it sort of went through this thing about uncertainty in the results. And John Norman alluded to this. You know, we have errors in measurements, which we like to politely ignore most of the time. And sometimes they're very difficult to even quantify. And then we have a much more difficult problem is the uncertainty in the calculations that produce this final number. And there's all kinds of problems there that cannot be treated with just a simple uncertainty analysis. Because something like this, not understanding how important various assumptions are, you can't put a plus or minus number to anymore. So we end up with these equations and these calculations. And when I was younger, I was quite convinced I was perfectly familiar with what that equation meant. And now, after all these years, I say to myself, I don't think I know what that equation means anymore. And I don't think any of the rest of us do either. And that's one of the problems we have of why we cannot get our numbers to add up and our bank accounts to balance. All right? And I had a lot of this came from Bert, because he would say, you know, I would say, well, I did this calculation. And he would go, well, how do you know it's right? I mean, you know, and so we had a lot of discussion. He's the first one that pointed out the closure problem to me, et cetera. And we still have this issue. For instance, I know in the carbon flux community, people that are trying to look at how much CO2 is absorbed by the biosphere versus emitted, and they come up with these numbers for fluxes, and now people are starting to ask them, we want an uncertainty on that number, just like a chemist would give you. I don't believe they can do it. Another thing I learned, you ask a student or somebody, how accurate is their sensor? So they look it up, and they say, well, the manufacturer says they calibrated it in a lab, and it's plus or minus a tenth of a degree. Well, that would be a pretty good temperature sensor, probably a calibrated thermistor. So you stick it outside, and you think that's the accuracy. And I remember a study Bert had done that he showed me the results of. I think he showed it at a meeting where he took a bunch of temperature sensors, had different radiation shields, different aspirations, and the results were very depressing because it's a mess. And so because of problems and how the sensor is actually sitting in the great outdoors and how you're trying to simulate the environment it would be in if it wasn't inside a little white container, the uncertainty is nothing like 0.1. It's much larger than that, okay? And we forget that, okay? It amazes me sometimes how well we actually do if you look at the true uncertainties. Fortunately, some of them must be canceling each other out, or otherwise we would really be in pretty bad shape. Numbers. He was good at numbers, and I learned to do this too. And by the way, I see this all the time. A student presents results. I'll give you an example, and they present a temperature, and that's what they present to me. or they present a sensible heat flux. So I'm a lot more mellow and less irreverent than when I was younger, but I can't help but provide a little torture to students like that, and I ask them, that's an interesting temperature. How did you get that number? What sensor did you use? Because I'd like to know what that sensor is, and I think Campbell Scientific would probably be interested in that sensor too. And eventually they go, oh, well, that's a spreadsheet put out. Okay, they have no comprehension of where they should stop that number or here. And one of them looked at me horrified when I said, you know, all those fluxes, let's just make them integers. And they go, integers? Well, all those numbers are just junk. We don't know we have any certainty in those numbers over here. Anyway, sometimes I would talk to Bert, and I know for a while Bruce and I were trying to convince him, and I know he wanted to do it, but to get involved in teaching a class in instrumentation could have been the best class on the continent for sure. And he was always interested, but there was always, nobody knows how buried I am. Nobody knows how buried I am. So it's just some of these remarks I always remember. He first brought this to my attention. And it's interesting, the better we get at making the measurements, the more clear this problem presents itself. And for a long time, and even up to the present, as John Norman noted, we have this wonderful human ability to just politely ignore things that are inconvenient. And we're all sort of grappling with this now, and I don't know what the solution to treating it is one problem. What kind of Band-Aid do you put on it? The other problem is, well, why is it happening? And again, partly from discussions with him, I don't have an answer, but my intuition tells me it's something of, this equation doesn't mean what we think it means. We know what it means mathematically. We're not being good atmospheric scientists in thinking about what it means physically, and that's why we're not using it right, okay? And I got a lot of that from him. Most of the exchanges of ideas that I had with Bert Tanner were often at meetings or at the roof of the White Owl, which is a bar in Logan. It was interesting because in 2006, I went to the meetings in San Diego, the Ag and Forest Met meetings, sort of the keystone meetings for a lot of the work I do. And Bert wasn't there because he had to go and help out with his son's bachelor party, which was being held on land in Montana. Is that correct? Yeah, and I heard it snowed the whole time. And
Memorial Day?
Yes. Anyway, he was very, he wasn't conflicted. He goes, it's an obvious choice. I'm really sorry to miss the meetings, but it's an obvious choice. After the meetings were over, I kept thinking to myself, something just, the communication with my colleagues, it just wasn't the same. And then I realized those evening sessions that would self-organize, but he was generally the perpetrator, and people would get involved, and there'd be all these talks and discussions. And when he wasn't there, it just didn't happen. So like people like I know Brian Amira, who I normally would spend a lot of time with, he's from Canada, I saw him for 15 minutes. So there's no way you can quantify someone who just seems to be a catalyst. And he also had a lot of disparaging things to say about light beer, by the way. But this is another one. These are quotes. Too much beer is just enough. And also, this is after a dinner one night. Of course, we can't turn these into the university. And finally, on a personal note, John Norman was right. We have this schizophrenic attitude in our culture, in our Western philosophy, and actually Descartes started this problem of pretending that there's an objective thinking part of our mind and an emotional part of our mind, and that they're somehow separate and that they need to be tamed, as if they're two different things. They're not two different things. They're two manifestations of the same thing, and we don't seem to understand that. And so we have trouble articulating it. But since Bert's passed away, this is a picture of the Wellsvilles, and that whenever I look at the Wellsvilles now, I think of him because he lived down at the foot of them. This picture was taken a bit, you're looking at a little too far south, but over there. And whenever I run, my running often takes me up to the university and then goes in various directions. And on the way down, I'm coming down that hill on 4th North, and I see the Wellsvilles laid out in front of me, and I see this patch of green that I know to be Mendon at the foot of the Wellsvilles. And I have this, just this image and awareness in my mind that that's where Bert was, that's where his remains are. He's not there, but his remains are there. And it's not a sad feeling, it's not a happy feeling, it's just poignant. It's just poignant. And so I was glad to have the opportunity to speak here today. Thanks.